So, hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the only podcast. I am one half of this show, Daniel O'Brien, writer for Last Week Tonight, writer of books, How to Fight Presidents and Your Presidential Fantasy Dream Team, dog owner of Jackson President O'Brien, and that's it. Those are the only things that I am. God almighty. Soren, what are you?
I'm Soren Bowie. I write for the show American Dad, and I am the proud owner of a wife and son.
Oh, whoops.
What do you mean, whoops? What happened?
No, I guess we're going to leave it in. We're going to leave all of it in. This is a show we ask each other questions and give each other answers, and you, our listeners, come back, let's say week after week, and you have your names that you prefer to be called, and they are, of course, the DOB Hive, featuring the Sore Friends of Bowie and all the sons and daughters of Baconator.
Now, wait a second.
What part?
I mean, you're going to have to walk me through that.
Okay. So it's DOB Hive.
Okay.
That's pretty clear.
Yes. Got it.
Sore Friends of Bowie.
What is that?
Because like Soren is almost Sore Friend. But like, I didn't want to just say the Sore Friends because that sounds a whole lot like friends who are in pain. So I wanted to make sure that your last name was in there.
Okay.
So it was clear.
Got it.
Sore Friends of Bowie.
Uh-huh.
And then, I originally wanted to do the Baconator Juniors, but I didn't realize that the smaller version of the Baconator was not Baconator Junior. It was the son of Baconator.
So, is it really?
Yeah, because it's Whopper Junior, and I suppose Wendy's wanted to distance themselves from the Whopper. So their smaller version of Burger is the son of Baconator.
That's horrifying, though. Suddenly there's family involved.
That's right. And they're all dead for our pleasure.
Oh, boy.
But really, I wanted to include Bacon in our fandom because he is a part of it now, despite anyone's best efforts, including his own. He's got a fan base, and they've decided to call themselves the Sons and Daughters of Baconator. How do you feel about that, Bacon?
I feel okay about that. I know you guys are joking, but I'm getting about one Twitter follower every 3 days.
Whoa.
Yeah. And now when I tweet something, occasionally someone will like it. And I like don't understand what the people want from me, because I don't think they're following me for something.
It's very funny to me because like people in our iTunes reviews who've given us 5 stars, thank you very much, all of you. There are people who have said that they've missed Soren and I talking together and that they are now also fans of Bacon. And it's like, I agree. I'm also a fan of Bacon's, but like in real life, because you don't really have an online presence that does anything for anyone. So no. I don't know what they are hoping to get out of following you on any platform.
And I'm sure they're disappointed. My Twitter activity is mostly like once every 3 weeks, I'll retweet a George Wallace joke. Man, that's it. All of his jokes, I only really find one of them very funny where he says like, he says so on and so forth in something that
yeah,
he shouldn't.
It's very good.
It's very funny, but that's basically it. So, I mean, maybe they're all just fans of George Wallace. That might be what it is.
Yeah.
If your Twitter handle was a request, Bacon, I feel like we've done that for you. We have made you bacon.
Yeah.
Hey, Dan, how's it going?
It's going all right. I'm a little bit tired. I took a kickboxing class yesterday, and I'm still a little sore and tired from that.
Well, I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about something else.
Okay.
You built some furniture.
I followed instructions to build a piece of furniture.
Okay, but like you didn't just use an Allen wrench, though, right? Like you actually had some tools involved?
No, I had some tools involved, and there are a couple of parts of this process that made me very excited. One of them was the instructions said, these are the tools you need that are not included in the kit. And I was like, you know, I'm a step above IKEA furniture assembly now, where they include all the tools, that I could say, yes, I do have these tools that are not included. Don't worry. And not only do I have these tools, in fact, I have a screwdriver that I prefer. which felt very good and felt very adult, because now I have multiple Phillips head screwdrivers and I can pick based on my mood or what I think the job requires. And that just felt like a very adult thing to do. And the other part of this, there was a part of a piece of furniture that was slightly damaged. And I was on the phone with my brother, David, while I was assembling it, and mentioned the damaged piece of furniture, like this panel that I thought I was going to have to send back to the manufacturer. And he said, where did it come from? And I told him the company. And he was very excited at the company because he is very familiar with their return policy. And it's a really good one and a fair one. And then we both got excited about the return policy of this company. And I was like, look at us. Look at how far I've come. If this isn't being an adult, then nothing is. Two 30-somethings excitedly talking on the phone about how fair this return policy is for this piece of furniture.
I've seen the piece. It's really nice. It's a TV console. It's like, or a entertainment center. And yeah, it's mid-century modern. And it's got some good straight lines, very functional.
Yeah. Nice. And it's got a splash of color in it, which is a little bit nerve-wracking to me because everything in my... I'm sorry. Has someone been dropping a marble for 35 minutes?
I just... a pen just fell apart in my hands and it has maybe 40 pieces inside of it.
Let me tell you that every time we record, Soren strangles a pen in his hands, twists it. Usually, he hasn't done it this time. Usually, he breaks the little cap thing piece off. Mm-hmm. So you can usually hear in most episodes that thing flies around. But boy... you have managed to unscrew all of the central parts of this pen.
I can't put it back together. I'm just going to put it down.
But at any rate, yeah, the TV console entertainment center has a splash of yellow in it, which is a departure from my normal design style, which is straight horizontal lines in either black or brown with a wood theme to it. And so now I just have this very loud, like kind of 70s yellow that is in my place. And, you know, we'll see how I feel about it.
I think it looks pretty cool.
I kind of like it.
Yeah, I think it matches your carpet nicely. You got some good contrasting colors. You got a blue and blue carpet and yellow on the thing. It looks good, like a movie poster.
Thanks, man. It has nothing on the thing that you actually built that you posted on Twitter recently.
Oh, yeah. Build as well. No big deal. didn't know that's where this conversation was going to go. Wow. Yeah. Much like one of my heroes, Jesus Christ, I am a carpenter of sorts, tradesman. I do some wood crafting.
Right.
And I like to call it that because it feels more ethereal and like kind of like a witch-like. Like I am working real magic with this wood.
So to recap, you are... idolizing your favorite witch, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Famous witch, Jesus Christ.
Famous witch.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Okay.
And so I made a hall tree. You know what that is?
I mean, I do.
I didn't know what a hall tree was either.
Okay. Good.
I knew that we moved into a new house and we needed an area next to the door where you could sit down and put shoes on, but we also needed a place to hang stuff. And I thought, I think I've seen in houses before someone who had like a bench and then the back, there was like a giant headboard, maybe like 6 feet high, and then along it are hooks. And that is apparently called a hall tree. And I found online some DIY projects and I found one that I thought, oh, that looks like something that's in, I could do. There's no like joints or anything like that. And followed it and built this thing that I think is really cool and neat. And it looks beautiful. And took a very long time and was very frustrating. And at times I wanted to cry and now it's done.
It really does. I'm trying to pull up your tweet now because there was something specific that you complained about that you were going to just have to live with. And I'm so embarrassed that I didn't even know.
They're the pocket holes on the sides. Yeah.
Pocket holes. Yeah. What do you mean when you say that? Cause I'm trying to look, to me, it looks like, and Bacon's going to put the link in the description below for this picture of this hall tree that you made. But to me, it looks perfect. There's a top to it. There's a section that is just for your hats until Colleen finds a better reason for it to exist. There's hooks for all of your coats, this seated platform where you could put on your shoes, and then well-organized shoes in this little subshelf. And meanwhile, you mentioned something, some imperfection that we'd all have to live with, but I looking at it, I can't see what it could be.
Yeah, so when you look at it, you don't see the whole point of, like, a if you make really good furniture, you shouldn't see any screws or nails or anything in it. And that's because for a lot of it, you're using what's called pocket holes, which are, you take a Craig jig, which is something that you push the wood into, and then you can drill diagonally into the wood. So at any point you can drill diagonally so that it will come out the bottom. So if you're putting something together at 90 degrees, if you can put those pocket screws on the back so no one will see it, or on the inside, then you can screw in diagonally and no one will ever see those at all.
Okay.
And then, but there's sometimes, just because of like the shape of the object or whatever you're making, you can't always hide all those. And so there's some pocket screws on the side, up on that top shelf, for the bracer on the side that I couldn't hide. And so I had to fill them, and I rushed it, and I didn't do a very good job of filling it. And you can see that they're there.
I mean, one could see.
Yes, one could see. If you're closer, you'd be able to see it. Yeah, there's some things with it that you just gotta live with. Like, I had to modify it. The directions online were actually even cooler, and I had to modify it because I fucked it up. but it nothing makes you feel dumber, but also like more accomplished than doing a project like this. Because during it, you fuck up in ways where you're like, how did I do that? I'm such a dummy. and then when you solve it, you feel really good.
Even assembling furniture that has like dummy proof directions, just like staring, the amount of time that I stare at a thing and hold two pieces of wood in my hand before I actually commit to inserting anything into anything, but I'm still looking at it, it's like, okay, it looks like this shelf unit goes up against this partition unit, and I'm pretty sure this is the side that's supposed to be facing me, but let me move my body and put the shelf where it would be in my apartment to make sure it still makes sense from this angle before I do anything. There's a lot of staring and feeling dumb.
Yes. Yeah. An awful lot of that. When I find like directions for these kinds of things online, I've figured it out now that I go to these sites that are like, there's these women craftsmen who are like, hey, I build stuff in my spare time. Why don't you take a look at this? Maybe you could build something like this.
Probably they're called craftswomen. I bet they're called craftswomen.
I bet craftspersons. Mm-hmm. And I love their directions like infinitely more. I've tried to follow some guys' directions. There's a weird ego to it. Like, where they're like, they just assume you have these planers and things like that, where you're like, I don't fucking have that. Yeah. I don't know how to do any. Or like their directions are not thorough, but like the women are really encouraging and want to help you build this thing. And that's right where I'm at. And that's exactly what I need. And their directions are so vastly, vastly easier to follow.
I came across a recipe from like a very male-centric website. Because normally I mean, I haven't gendered any of the recipes that I've ever used before. But this one, it has some kind of name that is like beer and ammo cooking or something absurd like that, where it's like aggressive horseshit. And one of the, like, they have the list of ingredients, and then you're getting into the recipe of the step-by-step, and there's a button you can click that I did not click, but it was like this big bold thing that was like, you don't need instructions, click here. And I was like, what? Well, who's that for? Like, I'm here because I need instructions, and I wouldn't get like an extra level of pride by being like, no, I don't. Now that I have the ingredients, I could do whatever I want. Like, you don't need to include the button that just says, you got it, you fucking stud.
Right. Then that's what, that there's like a weird element to that with the, even in the comments, you'd see like somebody, a woman, this woman who I followed for this haul tree, she had did this great functional haul tree and the directions were easy to follow. And then in the comments, people were like, I did a modified version of this, did this part with the, I split the legs instead. And I added another 3/4 inch on the back of the shelf, cause I think that's necessary. But the way that they're describing it, like the way that they're giving you their cut list and everything, it's, they're coming from it from a perspective of, you will have the exact same amount of knowledge as I do about woodworking.
Yeah.
And no one ever has the exact same amount of knowledge. And it's like a weird dude thing to do.
Yeah. That does seem very male. I'm also now, I want to talk about a lot of things. I want to talk about comments on things like this, but I also want to talk about, as you're getting into woodworking, are you, or woodcrafting or, witchcraft, are you
woodcraft?
All right. Are you in like, woodcrafting Twitter or podcasting about specifically woodworking or anything like that? Like, are you, cause I'm like fully
right
seeking out fishing subcultures and recipe and like food cooking subcultures. Are you at a point where you're digging into this separate culture of the internet?
Yeah, but in a very specific medium. Like, I don't want, on Twitter, it's too much. Those guys, like, there's so much I don't know about woodworking. Like, I have a real good sense of what my ceiling is, mm-hmm. and it's higher than I think a normal person just because I've done it a few times.
Because you built it, right?
Yeah. But it's not, I'm not, there's so much about it that I don't know. And I watch other people, like I was thinking about making a little buffet table. And as I started to like look through cabinetry and actually making something that can open and close, I was like, oh, this is, I'm out of my depth. I can't do drawers, mm-hmm. things like that. But I will on YouTube, I'm all about it. On YouTube, I just watch a lot of woodworking and I watch people do things that's more like aspirational, like I could never do. And I'm very excited by that. But on Twitter, it's useless to me. It doesn't even make sense what they're saying.
Yeah.
It's just like this whole glossary of terms I don't understand.
Yeah. Twitter is pretty bad. Like I wanted Twitter to have like a fishing Twitter in the same way that there's like an NBA Twitter and a comedy Twitter and a politics Twitter, which are things that like there's no one link that you can click to, but it's like there's enough of a community around this that you can add them to your feed and follow them when something important is happening that is relevant to this particular set of interests. But fishing Twitter, as far as I know, overlaps with hunting Twitter, which also overlaps in a very strong way with MAGA country Twitter in a way that like I can't really follow a person who is fishing regularly without also then being exposed to MAGA tweets and stuff that I don't care to see.
Yes.
But fishing YouTube is great.
That's the thing. I think YouTube is maybe like the watering hole for that kind of stuff. I really love going and watching people do woodworking on YouTube, also because I can see it. And I know, even if they're not talking about the thing that they're doing, I understand it in a way where like somebody's doing vertical slats on a picnic table, right? And they're cutting a bunch of pieces of wood all to match each other. They're not only cutting it all exactly right, but then they're clipping it all together and just sanding the top so that all the pieces are exactly the same height,
mm-hmm.
in a way where I was like, I would never have thought of doing that. I would never have thought of putting a belt sander on the end after clamping all of them together, like getting exactly the exact same height. And I was like, oh, that's nice.
I also wouldn't have thought to do that. Should we get into the show?
Oh, fuck the show.
Oh, wait, no, I want to get back to... No, you're right. Yeah, fuck the show. The Hall Tree, that base, that's strong enough to support you sitting down and putting your shoes on?
Yeah, that's... okay, so the bottom shelf, there's a bottom shelf and then like a seat on the bench.
Yeah.
And those are both plywood, which is actually a little bit stronger. And it's plywood, but it's on the sides, you can see that you can put this stuff called edging on, which is a little thin piece of wood that just covers the edge and you iron it on.
Yeah, no, I get it. Like you almost put the piece of wood on and like you get so close and like any minute now it's going to go on there and like you're fucking sweating, like you're so close, just put it on there. And then like Desert Rain comes on, it's like, oh fuck, it's going to be a whole thing now. But like maybe at the end of Desert Rain you'll put it on, but then you just don't. And then like the lights come on and it's time to go. And like, isn't that even better than putting the piece of wood on there, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. God, Jesus, Dan. Yes.
Yeah.
you have to iron it on.
Yeah.
So you have like an iron out in your wood shop where you're like ironing on a piece of wood.
Is this iron like the clothes iron that I'm not going to say I have, but I should have.
Exactly,
like
the same thing.
That same kind of thing. Okay.
Yeah. And then you're just like, whatever overhang there is coming off of the plywood, you shave off with a razor blade. It's just so you're not looking at plywood. And if you look at a lot of tables and stuff now, and you're just in your life, you'll see that it has this banding on it, this edging on it. so that you don't see that underneath it's particle board or that it's plywood.
Hmm.
Anyway, pretty great at this stuff.
Yeah. I love to hear it. I'm very excited about this. What's your next project, you know?
Yeah, I have to build a shop for my a table for my now wood shop.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, something I can work on top of that is exactly a flat, like straight, mm-hmm. so that when I'm putting stuff together, I'm not working on an uneven surface, because that's something I realized I need.
I would love to commission a mini shoe shelf from you, but you're 2 years behind and giving me a birthday present, so.
That's really something to look forward to for 2026, I think.
Should we do the show now?
All right.
How long has it been? 22 minutes? Yeah, let's do the show. Hey, Soren, quick question.
Yeah.
You have another baby on the way.
Mm-hmm.
You decided to name her Danielle, and I'm very flattered. And middle name O'Brien, also very, very flattered. Rare to have an apostrophe in a middle name, but earned, I believe. What is the biggest lesson from pregnancy number one that you've applied to pregnancy number two? Apart from naming
think
strategy.
About it. Yeah, I mean, I think about it, why don't you go first?
Fuck you.
So the first time that we did it, we did it. It was basically, we got the Mayo Clinic book, and like, there's these what to expect when you're expecting books that are kind of like the Bibles of pregnancy. And it's fun because it's like an advent calendar for pregnancy, where every single week you check it again and you're like, all right, well, let's see what's going on in there this week. Oh, she's getting eyelids, mm-hmm. or like whatever. Or she's the size of some string cheese, or like whatever food they equate babies to. Because for some reason, it's always food.
Yeah. And the first month, it's just a piece of string cheese with eyelids.
That's right.
Good.
Those are the very first things that come. We're so excited. And this time we aren't doing any of that. But the things that I've tried to be better about is that I didn't realize how much kind of pressure I was putting on her to do these things that I assumed moms were just supposed to do. Like that when you get pregnant, you cut out caffeine, that you don't eat cold cuts or like sandwich meats because the threat of Listeria.
And, I didn't know about that. I knew about caffeine, alcohol, and sushi, but I didn't know about like ham.
Yeah, ham, soft cheeses, like there's a lot of things that you're not supposed to eat. And then also there's like what like a mom will do, like that you have to maintain like a very specific window of weight gain as you go. That's the healthy amount of weight to gain. Mm-hmm. Like you're not supposed to undergain and you're not supposed to overgain. And like these types of things that were created, I think, with the best interest in mind of moms and for the baby, but well, actually probably not for the moms, for the baby, let's say. I don't think it was invented with the best interest of moms, but.
No, a woman gets pregnant and it's like, hey, this is your time. You're just eating for you.
And a lot of this stuff is just kind of like based on some like bullshit that doctors got real excited about, like getting the perfect mom, like to have the perfect pregnancy. And so like cutting out caffeine, there's not a lot of research around that and whether that's actually damaging or not. And so it's probably okay for women to have some coffee every once in a while. And even with alcohol, there's like, if a woman has a glass of wine occasionally, imagine seeing a pregnant woman drinking a glass of wine, just culturally.
Okay, hold on. Let me imagine it. Hold on. Okay.
It's let me just set the scene.
What am I wearing?
Okay. You're at a wedding. You're there.
Isn't it mine?
It's fun. It's a little bit hot out. No, God damn. Come on.
Okay.
You're not in the wedding, but you were invited. Okay. You were on the second tier. So they invited everybody at first. They found out who was coming and what other empty seats they had. Then they did a second tier.
It sounds like no plus one.
You're on that one.
I don't get a plus one.
They said, you called, you asked. They said they'd rather not. You said you're seeing this woman. And they said begrudgingly accepted that you could bring her.
Okay. All right.
You're there with her. You look good though, man.
Yeah.
You got on some of the remnants of your Emmy outfit.
Okay. I mean, I don't know how to take that. Like I wore a tuxedo.
It's not a full tux. Right. Oh, you've got on the socks.
Okay.
Good pair of socks. Mm-hmm. You decided to do the same tie that you wore. You're feeling good. It's hot out.
Mm-hmm.
And you're ordering a drink at the bar. And as you're ordering a drink, you look over and there's a woman having a conversation with somebody else. And she's wearing a flower print dress, but it's not doing anything to cover up like this 9 month. She's like, she's due any minute now. Mm-hmm. Like she had to buy this dress special to come to this event. And she's having a glass of Pinot Noir out there in the sun. And you in your head are thinking,
a white wine.
Her.
Oh, okay. That's what I'm thinking. Okay. I imagined I was thinking white wine is more appropriate. Like maybe.
No, you're right. Okay, let's change it.
No. You said she's drinking Pinot Noir in the sun at a summer wedding. That's what's happening. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know what's going on in the rest of her life that led to this moment.
Mm-hmm.
She enjoys the tanning.
I have an idea of what happened 9 months ago, but other than that, I'm just as in the dark as you are.
Not edging, I can tell you that much. So she's drinking it, and like culturally, everyone around you is looking at you, thinking, "What the fuck? Like, you're not allowed to do that when you're pregnant. You're not allowed to have a drink."
Is she alone at the bar, or is she like talking to somebody?
She's talking to somebody.
Is it the bartender, or is she talking to somebody else?
She's talking to your date.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask.
It looks like they're really hitting it off.
Okay. I see how this has turned. Yeah. I was going to leave my date for this woman and help raise this child. But now I see that I've once again been made a cuckold.
Yeah. And now your date is tasting the Pinot Noir and really seems to be enjoying it and thinking this isn't actually that bad an idea on a hot day.
Yeah. I mean...
Oh, she handed you her wine. Oh, and she's asked you to go take care of it.
Yeah, and I will dutifully. And you know, I wouldn't want to be rude, but like I have the ticket for the coat check for both of our coats, and it doesn't seem like we'll be leaving together. So how do I coordinate that with her? Because I don't want to ruin her night.
Mm-hmm. You got to get them early.
Yeah, I guess I have to. Am I gonna like? Tip the coat check person and be like, look, like I'm gonna point to my date. She is the one who is laughing too hard at that pregnant woman's jokes, and let the coat check person know that like here is her coat. She won't have a ticket, but remember her face, and I will tip you extra for this service that you do. And you know, please don't be scared that my head is adorned with the horns of a cuckold. It's okay. I'm all right. Have a lovely evening. I'll go home. And oh gosh, and then what, Soren?
The coat check person is not paying attention, Dan. They're looking past you.
But I just slipped them a 20.
This glowing woman. They've taken it. This glowing woman drinking her Pinot and handed you two coats, and now you're stuck with these two coats.
Okay, so I guess I'll just wait with it then.
No, I'm telling you what you do. You can go home whenever you like. You save yourself the embarrassment of having to watch them click the rest of the night.
I'm not embarrassed. Whip up a quick haltry, embarrassing about other people falling in love.
All right, tell yourself whatever you need to tell yourself to get through the rest of the night, man. You want to be on the dance floor while that's happening. That's your prerogative.
You know what just happened, Soren? You know what happened?
Huh?
I think I should give a toast. I do. I think I should give a toast. I think it's...
This is a bad idea. Don't do this.
I think I'm ready to give... No. I think I'm ready to give a toast.
You barely know this person. You're second tier, man.
I think I should do it. Yeah, but like, I feel like if I'm an expert on anything, it's love, and I should give a toast, probably.
Okay. You asked me a question
a while ago. What podcast is this?
You asked me a question about things that we're doing differently on this pregnancy or the things that we learned from the first one. The other one is that you're inundated by unsolicited advice from people all over everyone you meet in the street. And we've been, I think more her because they don't really come up to me and I say anything, but she's been much better about being like, no, thank you. Instead of sitting there and listening and nodding her head to whatever weird shit people have.
Right. Are you now allowed to say like put up the shield of, yeah, this is our second, so back off.
I think with people who
the shorthand of that.
People who you don't intend to burn bridges with, but when it's strangers who are just coming up to you at a Wendy's and being like, you should never get your legs up over above your belly button, because it'll end up being that the child is, the head falls backwards and then you have to have a reverse birth, a breech birth or whatever the fuck it is. Like a
reverse birth.
So there's a thing that happens occasionally where if your knees are up higher than your belly, or you're like in that position for long periods of time, say sitting on your couch with your feet up on a coffee table, and like your knees bent, but your feet just up on like flat on a coffee table. If you're in that position for a long time, the, as the baby continues to grow and drops, that it can drop without, with its head facing the wrong direction.
Okay.
And when that happens, like you can have, I think that's the breech birth. I can't remember if that's where when the feet come out first or if it's just the head's backwards, but like it's much more painful birth. But people, and the only reason I know this shit is because somebody comes up to us at a bus stop or whatever and is like, hey, here's some terrifying information. And it, she's been much better about just being like, to those people who just come up and immediately are like, they want to talk about the pregnancy. She'll say, no, thank you. And you can just sort of watch them blink and walk away. Yeah, it's wonderful.
That's great. I'm glad that's happening. But Soren, real quick question. You mentioned strangers coming up to you at Wendy's to talk about the pregnancy. I have a text from you from Christmas Eve. I said, Merry Christmas. And you said, Merry Christmas Eve. I'm at Wendy's. How often are you? Have you been going to Wendy's lately? That, so like, we already know Christmas Eve and another time where strangers accosted you and Colleen about the baby.
I've also been at a Wendy's before where Ronan was sucking his thumb and a guy was like, don't let your kid do that. It'll fuck up his teeth the rest of his life. I mean, like, you know, I try not to eat a lot of fast food anymore. I have just been off the rails for the holidays and I have not gotten back on since.
And it's all been Wendy's?
No, but the fact that I'm at Wendy's as often as I am, now imagine that I'm also at other fast food restaurants that often as well. The woman at Taco Bell says, what time do you have to be at work? One day. Because I was at Taco Bell at like 10:30. I'm not proud of it.
That's all right.
Do you have Dan, I have a quick question.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
I have a question for you. A thing I also noticed when I was home for the holidays was that my parents, there's still like some cultural stuff that they're not quite caught up on ethically, that they just missed the boat on. A good example of it is fat acceptance. I think my mom grew up a little heavy when she was young and then really worked hard to thin out as she got older. My brother, when he was young, was a little huskier. And then she, I think maybe in a not entirely healthy way, like really encouraged him to get thinner. In a way that certainly today people would be like, oh, no, don't do that. Kids are fine. Kids are fat. It's fine. And so,
well, like, what did she do? Movement, did you just say get thinner, or was it specifically like maybe try intermittent fasting?
Yeah. Okay. She started immediately buying snacks that were all, at the time, you know, you don't know. We didn't know that sugar was so bad, but there's snacks that were fat free. We get those Snack Wheels cookies. That's like basically my childhood. Those were the cookies we had in the house. Uh-huh. Anything dessert oriented was Snack Wheels. And when he came home one day from school when he was real young, and he told my mom, Olivia called me bubble butt. My mom goes, well, yeah, you have a bubble butt. And I think that was the first time he'd ever really thought about his own body in that kind of way. And that was not the most nurturing way to do it. And so fat acceptance is like not a, it seems to her, it's like all the talking points that have been debunked at this point, which is like, well, it's just not healthy for them. It's not healthy for them to be that fat. I'm like basically like thinking about it as philanthropically, like I'm doing them a favor. I'm thinking now 2060, let's say. Am I alive still? Bacon, crunch the numbers for me. Okay. What are the things that I'm going to be, that are going to be like my huge cultural, ethical blind spots? What am I just not going to be able to abide by at that point in my life? And I can go first if you want.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I understand the premise of the question, that like when I have to...
Oh, that mealy mouth premise? That didn't make sense to you?
No, you did a very good job. But just in case, like words that my parents say that I have to explain to them, we can't say anymore. And they don't know why. And my parents, like not coming from a place of racism, but coming from a place of the past, or, you know, sexism or transphobia, they're not coming from those places. They're just coming from, we grew up in a different time. And so we don't know why certain words aren't allowed to be said, and I have to educate them. Your question is, what do I think I will be educated on in the future?
Yeah, it's okay. An insensitivity based not on like hatred or stereotypes, but just complete ignorance or naivety.
Great.
And what is that going to be for you when you're old? And for me, I was thinking about it the other day, and I think it's polyamory. I think that if my son comes home in high school and he's got a girlfriend and a boyfriend.
Wow, your son's coming home from high school in 2060? What the fuck happened?
When is he in high school? 2040? Fuck. Shit. No, that can't be right. That's 20 years from now. That's four. All right, hold on. I'm going to do this. All right, so he's four in 2020. That's so.
This is very easy.
2030, he'll be 14. He'll be starting high school. Okay. So like 2032. All right. 2032. He's coming home and he's got, we're talking about our days at the table. It's a floating table. It's very exciting. This is a new thing that I've developed as a woodworker. It's a table that, it's magnets. He's come home and he's telling us that he's having trouble with his relationship with his boyfriend, but everything's going swimmingly with his girlfriend. And I had to be like, yeah, polyamory. Everybody's doing it. I'm sure it's fine. It's great. And not think in my head, this can only end in disaster. This is going to be awful for you. People have tried open relationships in my time and it went terribly. It's never, ever successful. You're gonna fail.
Mm. Do you...
That's where I think I'll stand.
And this is based on a thing that you think now that polyamory can't work, which like I'm throwing you under the bus, but I also quietly think that same thing, but I also loudly acknowledge that I'm ignorant about this world.
I'm confident that it works for some people, and I don't know, in my mind I think there's no way that works long term, but that's also because maybe I'm just closed-minded and ignorant on this subject.
Right. Well,
and so like it's come up as in culture where I'm like, I don't think, all right, Bammy, you can do what you want. Free love, fine. Do what you want when you're young. But like, you can't, how are you going to have a relationship like that later in your life? Like,
right.
How do you keep that up?
Yeah. It's ignorant without the negative connotations of ignorant. And it's only because you're ignorant because we grew up in a world where polyamory either wasn't discussed or didn't work or was restricted to fringe members of society and like pointedly in separate groups that were just like not discussed. And that doesn't make you ignorant because you were like closing yourself off from the knowledge of how it might work. You're ignorant just because it wasn't part of the reality that you were fed, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. I also, there's such a close attachment in my mind between emotion and sex that I can't understand why you wouldn't immediately feel competitive against somebody else who is also dating your significant other, or a hatred for them, or even just like you feel like you're not enough for the person that you're dating in that circumstance, that they'd have to also satisfy themselves with somebody else as well. It just seems like there's so much emotional baggage to it that the people who can do it, I'm like, well, you're a bigger person than I am. I don't understand how it works. Fine.
Man, that's so interesting. And this podcast requires someone who is not me to talk about this. Like even when you say like, how are you not competitive with this person or feel hatred? I think someone who is steeped in this lifestyle probably has something to say about that. And
yeah. Bacon? Yeah, it's something that I'll continue to try to be open-minded about with my children, but that I just don't totally understand. And I'll try to, I guess, if it ever comes up. But
I think it'll, like certain aspects of future modern sexuality will absolutely change in our lifetime in ways that are going to be great. And in ways that will also alienate you and I. from
yeah
the culture, and who's to say if it's good or bad that we're alienated, but like certainly it's going to happen. Like I can already see that watching shows like Sex Education, which just had its second season on Netflix, and The Politician, and also on Netflix, and Daybreak, also on Netflix. Just these shows centered around teens where gay sexuality, bisexuality, pansexuality are all expressed and accepted by everybody. We're already moving towards a world where this exists in the culture in ways that didn't when we were growing up. So the sexual future is going to be a very different landscape from the one that it was when you and I were coming of age. And I'm really curious what that's going to do and what it's going to mean. As I sit here now, I'm like, oh, I'm glad that this show is normalizing bisexuality. I'm glad that it's normalizing asexuality and pansexuality and everything else that is being normalized right now. I hope that I can hold on to that as I get older and older and new things show up. Historically, people don't hold on to those kinds of things. So I know there will absolutely be a thing when I'm older that seems as alien and confusing to me as asexuality seems to someone who is 50 right now.
And just like culturally, even now, and certainly when we were growing up, a group of people living together who all claim to be in love and are having sex with each other, that's Mormonism or that's a cult. Like a fundamentalist Mormonism or like a cult. Like those are the only ways that those are presented to us at this point, or when we were more formidable.
Right.
And I guess that's changing now. And maybe that will have an impact on the people who live in the society in which that's like the mirror that's held up to them. But I have such a hard time with it.
Yeah, it's very difficult to change, and it's difficult to be open to a thing that doesn't seem, worst word in the world, normal to you based on your upbringing. Like I have been very lucky that homosexuality has been normal to me for as long as I can remember. So when it showed up in a real way with like gay people that I met, it wasn't strange to me. It was like, no, of course. Yeah. Like I don't need to be taught that gay people exist and that lesbians exist, that trans people exist, that queer people exist. I don't need to be taught these things because it seemed like a thing that I grew up with. But there are people older than me who didn't grow up with it in as meaningfully communicated a way as I did and as you did. And it must seem as strange to them as it seems to you to hear that, like, oh yeah, this is my husband and this is my boyfriend and this is my wife and this is my sister wife and we all live in a house and it's normal to us. And you should just accept it. Like it's
right.
It's difficult for you to accept that because you grew up in a different time.
I guess so.
Yeah. And that's the I guess so part where I'm like, or is it difficult to accept because it's
it's not gonna work and my kid's gonna get hurt. He's gonna get his heart broken. No. Do you have one?
I mean, I have one that is not as real or pressing. Yeah. I feel like the, God willing, knock on wood, hopefully we will be better about the environment decades from now and we'll have made a bunch of changes and in a way that preserves this world for generations after we're all dead. And it'll be a positive, good thing. My thumbs are up. You can't tell. But I also know that probably means that I will have to make a bunch of small changes in my life that I know I will resent. Like even the news today when people are like, oh, you shouldn't do straws anymore. We shouldn't do straws. Or you should like buy a metal straw from Starbucks that you wash and you use over and over again because the straws are something, 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 the turtles, something, something, something. And I'm rolling my eyes about that. I think there will only be more and more of those things. Like you brought peanut butter to my attention about how I shouldn't be using Skippy or Jif because they're GIF because they're farming the peanuts in a way that is destroying rainforests and hurting orangutans. Is that right?
Yes, it's the oil, specifically the oil that they're using in it is a palm oil, and that palm oil is derived from a tree that in the habitat of the orangutan, and they're doing a lot of deforestation to get it, and it's destroying that
right
habitat.
So the correct thing for me to do to preserve the world and also orangutans is use a peanut butter that I like less that has this layer of fucking juice on top of every jar, and it's not as good as the peanut butter that I prefer, but I'm supposed to do it because it's better for the world. Fine, I'm doing it, but I'm mad about it. I think that is only going to increase in my lifetime in ways that I will try to keep up with as much as I can, but I know I'm going to reach a point where someone's going to be like, you shouldn't eat red apples because if you eat red apples, these farmers in Indonesia fucking die. So you have to eat these apples that are smaller and worse, and it's the only way to keep the world going. And also you shouldn't eat beef, like, period. You shouldn't eat beef anymore.
Right.
And also if you're going to eat French fries, they should be tater tots. And everyone who is saying these things will be correct, but I will be wrong and be fine with being wrong. Like, these are the things that my grandkids will, or not my grandkids, when it's, 2034 and Ronan comes home from school to talk to Soren, and then Soren talks to me about how we shouldn't be eating French fries anymore. I'll be like, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to keep eating French fries. I fought hard when I was younger for the environment. And that was before I knew that French fries were on the line. If I'd known, then I would have put a stop to that very early on.
Right. Yeah. Society is so big. The population of Earth is so big at this point that even the tiniest little thing that you do has these huge, huge consequences somewhere else in a way that it's like, it's very exhausting to think about. And you kind of have to pick and choose your battles a little bit. And I could totally see that happening in the future where you're just like, especially with fishing, you're not going to be allowed to fish in like 20 years. You're not going to be allowed to fish.
I know.
There's no way anyone will still be doing charters and you're just allowed to go out there and catch whatever you want.
I'm already on the train right now for we should just stop eating octopus. And like, that's not the reason that I picked that is because it's not as large of a problem as like beef. Because if you say, hey, like you've tried this to try to get America to stop eating beef or not even to stop, but to eat less beef, you're met with so much resistance. No one wants that kind of encroachment on their freedoms. So I'm starting very small with octopus because that is a problem that only impacts like markets in affluent areas. So like the opposite of a food desert, these areas are the communities where people want to eat octopus as a delicacy. And because octopus is wild caught and not farmed, the yield is inconsistent every year. And so there's a lot of money being poured into research into creating octopus farms, which could only negatively impact the environment. There's no way to make this sustainable and good for everybody. And it's also like there are ethical questions if you want to do this to octopuses, because we agree that they're smart and they feel pain and regret. And it's also like the only reason right now to make an octopus farm is to meet the demand, which is being made by the most affluent parts of the planet. And like, do we really need to destroy the world further to please the richest people on the planet who just decided that octopus is nice and they want to eat more of it? And so that's the bell that I've been banging on right now, and I'm passionate about it and I support it. I believe that one day, 25 years from now, someone's like, we also shouldn't be even eating crabs anymore. And I'll be like, well, fuck you. I like crabs.
Yeah. Yeah. There's going to be a lot more of that, I think. And so it won't just be dietary. It'll be like, in the future, you're going to be showering in gray water. There's like no reason not to. And we're going to be like, no, that's gross. Give me only the freshest, cleanest water to touch my skin for a fraction of a second before it slips down the drain forever. Or like into our toilets. The fact that we have like fresh water going into our toilets is crazy. But I like it. It's the way I grew up.
It's nice. I don't want an ugly toilet.
Oh, what time is it, Bacon?
We're basically done.
We're done? Okay.
Let's do it a little longer. Is that okay?
Yeah, whatever you guys want.
I want to talk about something that happened today while we're recording. Kobe Bryant and his daughter were killed in a helicopter crash. And I know that this, Dan and I, not super big on the Lakers. It hasn't meant much to us in our entire life. But I know for Bacon, like the Lakers are an important team to you and your entire family. And how weird that is when somebody famous that you've never met but that you've been following your entire life dies, and what that, how you feel that loss more immediately than even like a family member, because you know that quadrant of your life that they filled. It's so easy to see the room that they used to occupy in your heart, and then like when they're not there anymore, how hard that is. And it's different than like if a family member dies, because they run through so much of your life that it's hard to quantify right away. But with something like this, it's immediate and it feels like kind of like a bomb goes off. I just want to say I'm sorry to you, Bacon.
Thanks, Oren. And as a, you know, I was also really happy we recorded a couple of these today, and it's been I thought we weren't going to do it, which is such a weird thing to also like grapple with, that you know, we have to do this stuff, and if they're going to go out, we have to do them on a certain schedule, which we're not always great at, but I was like, I can't cancel this because of that. I didn't even know this person. But it's really good to, it was really good to like laugh about stuff today. And I thought everyone was, the jokes were like super funny during the other podcasts. So that was really good. And I had conversations with you guys. I mean, Gabe got here too, about how it's a weird feeling to feel silly about grief sometimes. You know, and you don't like, I felt like I kept having to justify it to people. And then sometimes they like, I had this girl reached out who I was friends with in high school, who I has had so many big life events happen, in the last 15 years of her life. And I haven't talked to her since then, but in high school, we were both like really big Laker fans and loved watching Kobe play, and her family had a similar thing as mine. And she like found my number and texted me today to find some sort of like shared space or shared grief, which I thought was like such a, it was really nice, but it was also a really interesting thing that you would like, you know, that there's also someone else that is probably experiencing this in the same way as you. And you want to like, not have to explain why you're feeling that way. You just want to kind of talk to someone about it. And it's interesting to see everyone else around the world have their own level of interactions. He was obviously a really complicated guy, and lots of people are having, you know, mixed feelings about, because of some of the stuff he did was bad, and rightfully so, but also, you know, he represented a lot for a lot of people around the world. So is it, yeah, it's interesting how you feel that way about someone you don't really even
yeah
know.
It adds another layer to the grief that is really difficult, because you said you felt silly about it, and I think that's a very common reaction to something like this, and not something that gets talked about really, where like it makes sense if I cry at the funeral of a relative, and it makes less sense if I cry when Robin Williams dies or Kobe Bryant dies or some other figure that I've never met. Like, you feel, no one would be upset if you called into work and said, I can't really come into work today because this important relative passed away. No one gets upset about that. But if you said, I can't really come into work today because this basketball, yeah, like this fixture in my life whom I've never spoken to passed away, like it feels like an additional punishment to feel silly, to grieve for someone you don't know. And I don't think should make yourself feel silly, or that society should make you feel silly, whatever it is. I think, you know, you're sad about a person. You're also sad about, the loss of this thing that bonded your family and made up your childhood. And that's a fair thing. It's not, no one's weeping over the loss of a fictional character. It's like, this means more than that. This is a person that, united your family and like bonded you to people you didn't know throughout your life. And now they're gone, and you shouldn't be made to feel silly about that.
Yeah. And it's interesting too. I mean, you see, like, the internet, is Twitter especially, is such a new way to experience this stuff. And there's a lot of people calling out, you know, rightly so, like, his daughter passed away too, which was yeah. horrible. But there was, I think it's still new, but there's, I think, seven other people on the helicopter, and people are rightfully like calling out that, you know, they deserve focus and attention. And it's just all these little cuts of it. It's such a weird thing to try and apply like morality to, or what's right or what's the wrong reaction to have. But it's also really comforting. I've been checking Twitter all day to see that other people that I care about or have an opinion on also are feeling hurt by it. And I think that's probably good.
It's like the sharing the load of grief just feels nice. It's what you naturally do in a circumstance where a family member dies. That's the reason everybody gets together and celebrates their life. It's not just to remember them and to send them off to wherever they go, but it's also like you are splitting it up among you so that there's not only one person who's carrying it, or you don't feel like you're the only person who's carrying it. And so in a circumstance like this, like, you feel less like you're entitled to that. But it is really nice to go on social. This is like the times when social media, I feel like, is very, very valuable, because you actually have the people out there who you scratch the same itch with that community, where they're feeling the same thing as you. And as long as you can block out the noise of the people who are like, no, fuck him. Like, think about what's going on in Iran right now. Like, how many people are starving to death in Venezuela? Like, that they're trying to equate it to these other people who, they haven't been a part of your life in a way where, like, if you were to think about them exclusively, you would never think about anything else ever. And so you just a group of people that have all got like a communal idea of what Kobe was in their mind and reminiscing about what he was to them. It's okay to like to grieve in that way and to share that with each other. And I don't think anyone should be made to feel bad about that.
But I appreciate you guys bringing it up. It was a big deal for me. And I think for a lot of other people. So I hope anyone else that's feeling sad, I hope they think it's okay to feel sad. And I would encourage them to check out some of the other really nice things that were written about them and are written about Kobe, and how, maybe it represented some stuff that wasn't directly tied to him, but things that you see in other people that you want to emulate, or those are the shinier, brighter spots of this. So I would encourage everyone to do that if they're feeling bummed out. Are you guys still going to do that thing where you make each other say something horrible at the end?
I mean, I could, but we are? Okay, great. then thank you, Bacon. I will close this out by tracking down all the social accounts. But before I do that, this is very off topic. Soren, you remember, we got together on Christmas and we watched Little Women, which I loved. You wrote a review of it that you don't mind if I just like quote your review, right? Is that okay?
Yeah, I'd love to. I don't have this platform I used to have, great. So this is great.
You wrote, quote, in your review of Little Women, Bob Odenkirk was great but underused. Timothy Chalamet, he's a bona fide star. Tracy Letts shined in his brief supporting role as the publisher, and I liked the scenes where the girls were being polite, like when the one girl asked permission to go to a party, or when that other girl said thank you when the man let her play piano. Greta Gerwig should be proud and also smile more. I am proud of her, end quote. You've seen it again since Christmas, I think. Have your thoughts evolved in any way?
Hold on, I'm looking through all the reviews I wrote. This one, you pulled this one from Tumblr, I assume?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is the one that I put up on Breitbart. Okay.
You rated it, so, you this one on Tumblr, you said this was a C man movie and A woman movie. Because of the curve.
Well, so here's the deal.
Or you say you grate them on a curves, and then you do like an hourglass thing with your hands.
Right. I think that's a fun little thing that I do. So it's like shoe sizes, right? So you can't put a woman in a 9 because that's ridiculous. Yeah, how's she going to fill those shoes, right? And so you can't expect a woman to fill a man's shoes. You understand? So you rate them on a different scale. A man's 9 is like, that's like a woman's 14. So as far as women go, like the fact that these women were in this movie, they memorized their lines, like that's a pretty big triumph, I think. And so I'm giving them a good grade. And the men, I mean, forget it. The real parts, like the meaty parts in this, those are wonderful. They really came through in every single respect. And they did a really good job of negotiating around all the, not like props. I don't want to say props, but like the other characters, the other characters. And just sort of like telling a true story that felt very real around them.
You also said your favorite part is how after the movie came out, how kind and diplomatic the women were by not saying anything when Joker absolutely destroyed them in terms of Oscar nominations. You said it was really great that I'm going to say Saoirse, but you said Sarah Ronan just smiled politely at Joker's 11 Oscar nominations.
Yeah, they didn't raise a fuss. Bacon, do you have something to say? What are you mumbling over there? Mumbling in agreement?
Trying to walk out of the room.
You can find Bacon on Twitter at Make Me Bacon, please, PLS, or Soren at Soren_LTD, or me at DOB_INC, or the show at QQ_Soren and Dan, or on Instagram, probably. You can find our engineer and producer, Gabe, at GabeHarder.com, probably, and hire him for things. You can email the show at QQ with Soren and Daniel at gmail.com. We have a Patreon that you can find if you Google. I will be a special guest on the Daily Zeitgeist live podcast show here in New York, at Brooklyn, at the Bell House Theater on February 12th. Doors at 7, show at 7:30. You can also find that information if you Google, or if you look at the notes on the bottom of our website. That will direct you there.
I guess that's it.
Everything. Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Bye, Dan. Bye.